So the topic today is Leaf Neighbor Lasitin Mikshol. The Torah has a prohibition to in front of a person who's blind, Leaf Neighbor in front of a person who's blind, do not be sosim a stumbling block. So this word sosim is a very difficult word. What exactly does the word sosim mean? Part of the question is that, so the simple understanding means that this fellow was like such a mean fellow that he would like want somebody who's blind, like, why not put something in front of him and make him trip and have a lot of fun. The word for that is sima, to place. The Torah uses the word lositein, which means to give. So we're grappling with this word. If it meant literally to put a stumbling block, it would have said, do not place a stumbling block. Losita means do not give. Because I'll understand it. Two explanations Rashi brings. One is that you should not give a person bad advice. So if I'm knowingly giving a person bad advice, usually the reason I would do that is because it's some benefit to myself. But even if it's not any benefit to myself, just giving, I enjoy the fact that somebody would do something, mess himself up. That's the issue of the Torah of, it's a practical joke. That sort would be an issue of giving a bad etzah. The second prohibition is the idea of causing a person who's an iver bedover. He's not knowledgeable, he doesn't understand, or he has some reason why he's inclined to do something wrong, and I'm going to tempt him, and I'm going to cause him to sin. So both of those are accepted in halacha. Both of these are true. He serve in the Torah, a person would do that. If I'm going to facilitate somebody transgressing, or I'm going to give a person bad advice, I won't release of the Torah.
What if that's just like, is that just for intention? Like, what if they give you advice and it's not good, but they don't actually realize
it? If there's no bad intent, you do not get the Veira. But the Rebbeinu Yonah says, obviously the point over here is you have a responsibility to give good advice, which means that a person who doesn't really know what he's talking about should recognize that and keep his mouth shut. That's very nice that you think, but the problem is, right, so we want to try and make sure that the person does this properly. Okay, so now, the more it comes along, the more it qualifies this prohibition, the more it says that this prohibition is only true if the person cannot do it without you. So if the person can transgress without you, you're just making it a little bit easier for him. So the Morgan is an example where you have a person who's a nazir who's not allowed to drink wine, and the cup of wine is on one side of the river, the container of wine is on one side of the river, the nazir is on the other side of the river, and he can't cross the river, and he asks you to throw it across to him. So that would be a case where you cannot do it without you. But if a person... If a person could do it without you, just you're helping him, so that's not this issue. So there's an issue of Rabbanan. Tosafot says there's an issue of Rabbanan to be involved in that type of situation. We're going to see that might change depending on what type of person you're talking about. Okay. Tosafot then asks the second point, that if the person is somebody that you know in general keeps a locha, so if the nose of the person who knows keeps a locha, he's asked you for the barrel of wine, he might want the barrel of wine to give to somebody, which he's allowed to do, etc. You have no reason, and therefore you have no responsibility to contemplate the possibility he plans to transgress. But you're talking about a person which your concern might actually decide to drink it himself if you pass it to him. The person who's known to keep halacha wants some non-kosher, to buy something non-kosher. We have to assume that he probably wants to do it to give it to somebody not Jewish and something like that. So you're allowed to assume that. Okay, so now, but in this definition of possible or impossible without you, it's impossible without you. Now you're making it possible. So how impossible is impossible? Well, he could do it without you. It's going to cost him a lot of money. Or a tremendous amount of effort, and you're making it much, much less effort involved and for him to do that. Is that going to be defined as such? Or let's say there's a question of primary and secondary. Tzir Moshe was asked the following question. A person who's a kosher caterer, he has a hall. Somebody wants to rent out the hall, and the concern is that when they rent out the hall for the wedding, they're going to have mixed dancing. So is he allowed to rent this hall to these people, thereby giving him the usage of the hall, knowing that they're going to be mixed dancing involved? And he says that's mutter, because your primary purpose of renting the hall is not for dancing, it's for the meal, and the dancing is a secondary thing. It seems like you're facilitating that, but that's not the direct intent of what you're doing. At the end of the tshuva, he talks about a different case. Let's say I know somebody doesn't keep a certain halacha, and I have a case where it's a suffix. For example, the question was, I have a clothing store, and so I sell suits. Some of the suits have shatnez in them. I don't check all of them beforehand. I rely on the buyer to check them. So that's normal, that's fine. I sell it. If it's shatnez, he brings it back, and then he returns it, and everything is fine. But I have some people which are not going to be careful about checking for shatnez. So am I allowed to sell them a suit with the possibility of this suit being containing shatnez? So he says, if it's checking. A real concern,
Sorry, checking for
shatnez. The Torah prohibits
mixing of
wool and linen.
Right.
So many times, a strong word. Sometimes in a suit you can have, especially a high end suit, a wool suit. There might be linen thread. It's a stronger thread. Some of the padding, and sometimes there's some of the button, the thread used for the buttons.
From the collar lock.
Alright, cool.
So I'm relying on my purchasers to check. You bring it to the person who knows how to check for it, then he pay him a few dollars and he checks for it. A lot of stores nowadays actually provide, in the New York area, they provide the service. Either they're checked beforehand or they're provided there in the store. But if that's not the situation, so what's supposed to happen? Am I allowed to sell the suits? He says, if it's a real concern, or is this something with this is something which has come up in these type of suits on a regular basis, so you can't sell it to him if you know he's not going to check. Whereas it's just like the chumrah that we have, that maybe there's a possibility, and therefore we check for shatnez. So that chumrah, you will be allowed to sell him the suits, even though he will not check for shatnez, because it's not really a bona fide chashash. The definitions of that probably deserves a different shir, how you define that. A common issue which comes up is secretary, or employee working, the boss says, will you please get on the phone and order me a Lido's pizza, right? So you're facilitating him eating non-kosher food. He's a Jewish guy, he doesn't keep kosher. Are you allowed to make that phone call? So the answer is yes, because he can make the phone call without you, just because, he'd rather have his secretary do it than himself. But it's not something which you're really facilitating anything. But you are involved in being Messiah. And Tosis says, even in cases where he can get it without you, you still have this history of being Messiah. You are helping him do the Avera. So on that, the Shach comes along and says that prohibition of Messiah, which is an Isser Derabbanan, that the Chama added above and beyond the Isser of the Torah, they added an Isser Derabbanan, doesn't apply to a person who knowingly transgresses. So if a person who's known to be a Mumer, so the Derabbanan did not make any type of protection. The Isser of the Torah still exists, so I can't provide him with non-kosher food, which he could not get without me. But kosher, which he can get without me, the fact that I'm helping him do that is not an issue.
So if I'm at my in-laws' house and they're grilling their tray of steaks outside, and can I pass them the tray of meat to bring outside?
Right, so that would be mutter.
That's mutter because this is what they do; it's known, and they know.
Right. So now you have the shear on Sunday. We're going to talk about if there's implications that you're condoning other action, is that's a more problematic issue. Now it's not just that I'm condoning what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I'm making a statement that's okay. I'm not making a statement that's okay because it's not okay. I don't have to stop him. Mm-hmm. I don't have an issue of facilitating, but I cannot condone and I cannot imply that I'm saying it's okay. So that itself comes with its own set of problems. So that's the shear on Sunday. How do you play those type of stories out? Mm-hmm. So So this issue of the Rabbanan of being Messiah doesn't apply in that type of situation. A person is a Mechallel Shabbos, so if I would provide him with the ability to be Mechallel Shabbos, which he could not have without me, that would be problematic. But if it would be something which he could do anyway, so I invite him to a Simcha. He could drive without me. Right, so Lechara, I'm not. There's no leaf for the Hebrew. But, right, so Rashi comes along and says there's a new problem over here. Of course, he could drive without you, but this event that you're asking him to come to, he would not have come unless you invited him. So you are actively beyond what's called lifnei iver. You are actually trying to convince him to do it by inviting him. So that's Ramosha holds that's a new layer beyond the which is his own approach. Most the Chabad Chaim disagrees with that. The case of the Gemara was I'm not saying yay or nay. You know, I'm passing him something. You know, he might not, etc. But if I am convincing him, so the Gemara talks about this concept, what's called a mesis. A mesis is a person who is convincing.
Inciting.
The case of the mesis was the Torah's example was for Avodah Zorah. So is mesis a special prohibition just by Avodah Zorah, or this is a general prohibition on all any of the various of the Torah? So Rambam assumes that it applies to any of the various of the Torah. There's an issur of mesis. If I am in some way trying to convince the person to do it, so that would be a problem, and that would be problematic. That the Chofetz Chaim discusses this in the context of Lashon Hara, and maybe, you know, sometimes when I'm, do you want to hear this story? Mm-hmm. Well, I really wasn't in the mood of hearing this story, but now that you say I want to hear the story, so that's more than lifnei iver. I'm being maces you. So does he have the problem of maces? He says no. He brings from one of the Rishonim, but maces only applies to Avodah Zorah. So assuming according to that, the case of Ramosha, the case of inviting somebody to come for the Shabbos meal, would not be the Isser of Mesis. It would be the regular Isser of Lifnei Iver, which once it's the regular prohibition of Lifnei Iver, we have the rule, if he could do it without you, it's not a problem. You're still going to have this other issue of, well, if I'm inviting him and he knows that I know that he drives, I'm inviting him anyway, am I implying that it's okay for him to drive on Shabbos? Which that's the again, that's a topic which I deal with on Sunday. Mm-hmm. How does that play out? But if I'm just he knows I don't want him to drive, and I prefer he doesn't drive. But Derek Eretz is to invite him, you know, and then he might drive. I'm not implying that I'm agreeing to it, but I know he's my uncle, and I got to invite him. Whatever it is, you know, I don't invite him, it causes a lot of family politics. He knows I don't necessarily want him to do that. So then I'm not being maces him. I'm not condoning either. And then you have the regular rule of lifnei iver. He could do it without you, so that would not be a problem. So a person really make sure that in those situations, the person could invite somebody in that type of situation.
Can I actually ask a very situational question, just out of my own curiosity, which I think is related to this? So one of my one of my aunts who does not observe Shabbos was asking the other aunt who does observe Shabbos to look at something on her a picture of some kind of countertop on her phone that she was curious about picking out over Shabbos, but she was holding the phone and flipping through it and showing my other aunt who was observant. So how do you see this situation?
Interesting question. So if the non-observant aunt is going to be doing what she's doing anyway,
yeah,
right? So the observant aunt doesn't have this prohibition, but if she's going to view it as it were, she's saying, she's implying that it's acceptable that her sister or whatever it is doing this, but she shouldn't be implying that that it's acceptable. Yeah. It's not acceptable.
Yeah.
She's not. So that's this other issue of condoning, which is comes with its own set of halachas and challenges. Okay. What about the following scenario that he can't do it without somebody, but it doesn't have to be me? Mm-hmm. So the example, which the person grappled with, is the case of a loan with interest. It's impossible to do a loan without interest without two parties, right? Because one person can't borrow money without it. So there's always going to be two people involved, but there's people available to lend him with interest. If I lend him with interest, so there's the question being, I can't lend the Jew money with interest, but there's an opinion that says that if the individual is a mumer, I'm allowed to lend him with interest. So, but I still have a problem, he can't give me interest, so I have a leaf in the Hebrew problem. Well, he could borrow the money from somebody else and give them interest, right? So it could happen without me. So that's like we're saying, it's not, on the other hand, that's not true, because over here, there's somebody who has to play that role of being the bad guy. In the other cases, the person will go on his own and take the food himself. Okay, well, over here, somebody has to be the bad guy, so is it okay that I should be the bad guy? It's not really he can do it himself, because he can't do it himself. He needs somebody else to help him. The question is, he has other people who are willing to play that role. So in that situation, the Mishnah Melech says that that's a problem of lifnei iver. So I could not be involved in that type of situation.
Although by transferring the responsibility off of you taking it on, wouldn't you be implying that you're okay with it being someone else or whatever? Like, do you have equal responsibility for whether the thing gets transferred to someone else versus...
That would be an interesting consideration. Okay. A sad but potentially possible situation, which I just recently had, that somebody asked me the shiloh. They have an elderly relative who's not well, does not keep kosher, and they're in the hospital, and they went to visit them, and the nurse says, oh, would you like to feed them supper? I can't feed them supper, right? So it's non-kosher food. So it would be very, it became like very, you know, yeah. The relative was like uncomfortable, the fact that they refused to feed them. So basically the psak, if the relative can eat himself, and it's just easier for that somebody else to feed them, so then you don't have lifnei iver. The person cannot eat himself, but somebody has to feed him. The question is just who's going to do that? It's going to be the nurse, or going to be you? You get involved in this Mishnah Melech. Now somebody has to be involved in this. There has to be a second party involved over here. Right? Now, there has to be a second party involved over here. Can you be that second party? Now, the application of this question is, let's say I'm a frum nurse, and I'm asked to do that. So I say, I'll ask the other nurse at the nursing station to do it instead of me, but she's also Jewish. So can I ask the other nurse? Well, she doesn't, you know, am I allowed to ask her to do that? She's being over the bear feeding somebody non-kosher food. I can't flip responsibility with her either, so I can't feed the patients, and I can't ask somebody else to do it for me. Can I ask a non-Jewish co-worker to do that? So, you know, that's a harder question, you know, but possibly that's what the person can say. I religiously I can't do it, and leave it like that. Somebody else says, okay, so I'll do it, that's fine. But to ask them to do it might be a problem in that situation as well. Let's hold it here.
Is there a lot of argument on the Mishnah Melech? Is there a significant argument?
You know, I have not seen a lot of argument on it. I haven't seen people discuss it too much. He gets involved in the case of the Mishnah says that the case of a Malbot Aloy, but there's Lif Neiver. So he says, you know, why is the Mishnah just automatically assuming there's Lif Neiver? You know, it depends if the loan's available or not. So maybe, you know, as he says, according to him, it makes sense. There's always going to be lifnei iver by definition. The Mishnah seems to say this as a blanket statement across the board. There's always lifnei iver in a malva loiva ribbis situation.